Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I am Brad Rose. I'm an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that means a lot to them and has left its mark. Previous guests include Randall Dunn, Danya, Sean McCann, Kalia Vandiver. A lot of people. I don't know. There's been a ton of people on here. But this week, I am so excited to have geologist, aka Brian Waits, on the show. Brian has got an amazing new album out on Friday, January 30th, called Can I Get a Pack of Camel Lights? I kind of think of it, it's like if a hurdy-gurdy record was made for SST back in the 90s. That's what this is, and I love it so much. I mean, I love the hurdy-gurdy, but hearing it within this sort of framework context, man, I've listened to this record so many times. It's accompanied me a lot in the studio when I've been painting and stuff, and it's just amazing. Can't recommend enough. And of course, you know, a lot of you probably know Brian, geologist from Animal Collective, and many other things, but I want people to hear this record. So, we had a lot of fun on this episode. If you are listening to this on Patreon, then just make sure you listen to the story he tells of the Patreon session, because it's wild and fun and amazing. But the whole thing, this was just such a good time. And I want to give a shout out to Mark Masters, who helped make this episode happen. He kind of put us in touch and really helped facilitate it. And yeah, it came out great. And I hope you all enjoy it. My guest today is an artist, musician, technically not a scientist. It's not geologist. It's Brian Waits. Welcome to the show.
Woo. Thanks for having me.
So you got a new record out next week as we record this on January 31st, which first of all, Can I Get a Pack of Camel Lights? Love the title. Took me straight back to smoking in the railroad tracks across from high school before class. Yeah. But so it's ostensibly, it's a hurdy-gurdy record. That's the long and short of it. In the liner notes or the album description, it talks about when you saw Kaji Haino at Tonic in 1998. So is that was your first exposure to the hurdy-gurdy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. At least that I was aware of, that I knew of. He did a 3-night residency over Halloween weekend in 98, and I was doing radio promotion for the Club Tonic at WKCR in New York. So I got on the list for a few of those shows, and that was the first one he did. The first set was a hurdy-gurdy set, just like a drone, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of atonal, but like not really, you know. I don't like using the word atonal all the time as if it you know, there were a lot of tones.
So. Right. Yeah. Well, so yeah, that's amazing. I mean, the hurdy-gurdy records that he did are the first one. That was like the first time I think I ever heard of hurdy-gurdy. And, and Kaji Haino, I could do a whole podcast just talking about how much I love Kaji Haino for a long time. But, you talk about whatever drone you can make with a hurdy-gurdy wasn't going to live up to that experience.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, hurdy-gurdy's like the different instruments have different amount of strings, different amount of drone strings and melody strings. I have the most basic student model that you can really have, except it has a pickup in it. So I can amplify it and put it through pedals. But other than that, like it's not, you can't do what he can do. And I just like, as much as I like experimental music and people think of me as that's my role in Animal Collective, I'm not sure totally like on my own what I have more to offer to that world.
Right.
I I don't know if I'm just being hard on myself, but I didn't think anything like sounded as good as what he did. And that, you know, there's other, not even hurdy-gurdy records, but things like Tony Conrad records or Theater of Eternal Music stuff. And then there's some current players like Jan Gordon in France. He plays solo stuff. He also plays in a band called France, which follows a little bit of the Outside the Dream Syndicate record formula, but like so rockin'. And then I'm not quite sure how you pronounce the name, but Lise Barkas, another French hurdy-gurdy player. They just do these amazing, you know, what you would think of when somebody says like, well, that's just like a drone. It's just noise or it's avant-garde, you know, quote unquote avant-garde, but you're like, but it's like so fucking good. Like so. Right. Pop, you know what I mean? And I felt like when I was trying to do my version of that, I could never like make anything where I was having that reaction to it. So,
That makes sense. And so you heard there's a story of like the Greg Jim playing guitar over like solos over a drum machine, which again is like, that's an amazing, such a simple, amazing concept. But like what clicked when you heard that kind of was like, oh,
maybe. Well, it was just like, I have my modular synthesizer and I thought maybe just to make the, like my bandmate Dave Portner, who's AV Terran, I'm glad David asked me to go on tour with him. And it was like happening like in 6 weeks. And we had toured together before the pandemic. And I had a modular synth set and I just didn't want to play. I didn't want to revisit anything from that pre-COVID time. And I've been playing a lot of Hurdy-Gurdy and Animal Collective and wanted to explore it. So I gave myself like 6 weeks basically like to just write a whole new set. Because I wasn't having fun trying to make this drone and ambient set. I thought like, well, maybe if I don't know, I just wanted to have like fun for a day. So I thought, I'll make a beat with my modular and I will just like plug this into a distortion pedal. And I just need to like rock out. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's like what I was having fun doing in those days, because I was listening to all these old SST records. I was having a lot of fun listening to Black Flag and a lot of fun listening to the Meat Puppets. And shortly before that, or maybe like half a year, when Pavement was going on tour for my NTS show, Dave and I dug out all of our old live Pavement tapes and digitized them. So I had all this live Pavement stuff. And I was just in like a teenage rock frame of mind. And that would be like what would be fun to do. So when I heard that thing about Gin and the drum machine, I was like, I'll just do that today. I need to take a break from trying to like compose something that's ambient and droney and just like have fun. And I had a blast. The last song on the record is called Sonora. That's like the product of that day. Like that beat is what I made. like the electronic side of the beat, not the live drums, but, and like phrases that eventually became the song or what just I improvised that day. And they're kind of referential to like things I like. And, and I had that was another like emotional hump to get over, like to do something referential, which is a very un-Animal Collective thing to do. But it was a really fun, honest day of making music. Like every other day when I came home from my studio and my wife was like, how'd it go? I'd be like, I don't even know why I'm doing this. Right. I shouldn't do solo music. I just got to wait around for Animal Collective to play and maybe get like a job until that happens. Like I'm not offering anything new to the world with what I'm doing. And then even with that day, I was like, I'm not sure I offered anything new today, but like I had like a really fun, felt like a really fun, honest day of playing music. And I just followed that as like a signpost for the next few weeks and wrote a live set that then eventually became this record.
That's awesome. I think that touches on. So I've been thinking about that a lot. Like I have a project that I do with my wife and we haven't done anything. Like last record was 12, 13 years ago. And then we had a kid and that kind of just derailed all of that. But we're doing like our first show in a couple months in over a decade.
Nice.
One of the things that's been, it's this idea of fun. It's like, this is supposed to be fun. Like I want to and there's something so, I don't know. There's something, it feels weirdly, it's just, especially, I don't know, in the state of the world now, like, no, I'm having like fun and play. Feel subversive in a weird way.
Yeah, totally.
And
it's not like the whole process is always fun. Then you go into, I mean, like the record's coming out in a week and I'm definitely in the zone of like, I don't know, did I make something good? I have, like, I hate reading reviews. I try not to read them, but like they always, especially with this blizzard coming, like I might just be stuck in the house.
Yep.
Looking for them, but and that's not fun. But
no,
but like that first day was fun, and I just wanted to follow that. And I was like, I think something's telling me something that maybe it's worth pursuing. So
yeah, I love the record. I've been blasting it in the studio, like when I've been painting and stuff a lot the last couple weeks.
Oh, thanks so much, man.
And I like the SST reference point because that was one of the things. It reminded me a lot. Like I have very vivid memories as a teenager ordering records out of Thrasher magazine. There was like, I can't remember what the record store was, but they put a catalog in there. Mm-hmm. And in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you couldn't get anything. So I was just blindly sending off cash to this place. Uh-huh. And I remembered, I knew of SST because I think I remember Kurt Cobain talking about it, or it was like some lineage from there. And this totally brought me back to that place in some ways, and a really, not in a like nostalgic way, but in a like sonically, it was like, oh yeah, this is in that space, but it's also a hurdy-gurdy record. So what?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that made me, I was just going to release it as a live cassette because I did record one of the shows, or somebody recorded one for me. But then I started to hear different ideas when I was listening back to it, and felt like it deserved more effort and attention from me. But then I found out on that same podcast that the guy who owned the studio, Radio Tokyo, it was that studio where like a lot of classic SST records were done. Like I think Double Nickel Dime was there. His name was Ethan James. He played in Blue Cheer as well. When he got out of like recording punk records, he became a master hurdy-gurdy player. And he was like known as the go-to guy for hurdy-gurdy in California and on the West Coast. And then I was like, that's just insane. And I started being like, what if he had actually made a hurdy-gurdy record for SST?
Yeah.
Maybe it would have sounded a little bit like this thing that I've written and been playing live. And so I'll just like see this concept through.
That's awesome. Before we get into the song stuff, I did want to, so your son plays guitar on one of the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
How cool was that?
It was great. I mean, I wasn't even sure I was going to keep that track. Like I played that electronic beat live and just made noise on top of it with the hurdy-gurdy. So, it was like definitely the throwaway going into the recording session. And I thought I'd bring this, we have this like broken small acoustic guitar around the house, and I just love the way it sounds. And I wanted to get that on the record. So I was like, well, I'll just strum power chords over this electronic beat. Maybe it'll be like an interlude or something. Yeah. But then he called me when I was driving down to Asheville to go record at my friend's. And he's like, you left that guitar here. So then he was like, if it's just like bar chords, and he'd only been playing guitar a few months and taught himself. He was 13 at the time. He was like, I can just play it, I'm sure. And I just like sent him a little iPhone video of like, I guess I was going to play something like this. And so, awesome. Eventually then he did it. He actually ended up like coming down to Asheville, like for a family visit. Cause we have a lot of friends there, brought the guitar and did it.
That's awesome.
So I kept it on there. You know, I wanted to honor his bravery. And then also like I had some other friends in Asheville or guest musicians, like they played drums and vibraphone on it. And I really love what everybody else did. So I left the track on there just to kind of like honor everybody's effort. But yeah, it's great. My son's a really good musician. We don't always like have, I don't know if we'll, as he grows up, we'll end up having the same taste in things, but,
sure.
But it's really, I love watching him do it. You know?
Yeah. No, my daughter started learning the cello about a year and a half ago, and just watching that develop and seeing it's the coolest thing.
Yeah.
Especially like, cause I don't play a string instrument like that. So getting to see her do things that I have no idea how to do. And she loves to hold that over my head. it's such a cool thing.
I mean, the hurdy-gurdy is the only thing I can play like that, you know?
man,
I play it in a way that like just replaces the feeling I never had as a teenager where I wanted to play like kind of punk-ish guitar solos or something, you know?
That's awesome. Oh man. I've wanted a hurdy-gurdy for a long time and have never, I don't know why I've never got one, but, yeah, I don't know. One of these days, maybe. The last thing I need is more instruments right now. But anyway, well, that's cool, man. I don't have any good segue here, so we're just going to jump into it. And as always, I'm going to start with, what is the first song that you remember?
The first song I remember is Man Eater by Hall & Oates.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I would have been like 2 or 3, maybe 4. I don't know what year that song came out, but it was definitely the early 80s. I have like a vivid memory of like singing it as at a gas station, like while like we were parked at the pump, you know? So I have a vivid, like, that's the only time I can like remember, like, that's like the solid memory of it. And being really excited. And then, but then it just became like, it wasn't the first time I'd heard it, clearly.
Sure.
But my parents, it's just like a common story in my household growing up. Like, when Brian sort of came online and like noticed music on the radio, like Man Eater was his favorite song and like the one he would sing along with the most. And, yes. That's my first one.
Yeah. That's, I have that same story. My song was Elvira by the Oak Ridge Boys. My parents tell the story that, because growing up in Oklahoma, obviously they listen to a lot of country music, and they would be playing it or it'd come on the radio, and I would just come running from wherever I was in the house and just start belting it out. And yes. I don't know which song I'd rather listen to today, Man Eater or Elvira, but whatever, you know.
I like all notes. I definitely happy with that one, you know. I mean, yeah, it's just like my family lived in like one sort of faraway suburb from Philadelphia. We moved closer eventually when I was born, and my mom used to meet with another mom and like their kids. We used to go to this, might still be there. If anyone from Philadelphia from Bucks County is listening, it's called Zotto's. It was like a Greek diner. And I was obsessed with, just rye toast with butter, you know, like where like the butter would be just like perfectly melted already on the rye toast. And I think of like that with that song Man Eater. Like I think of like driving
to
the diner with my mom and being really excited to eat rye toast at Zotto's, and always saying like it's nursery school, that was my favorite food, and like the Zotto's rye toast and Man Eater was my favorite song.
That's awesome. What is the song that either makes you cry or it makes you kind of feel in that kind of way, if it doesn't actually make you cry?
It's a little cheesy, but I go with Baby Mine from Dumbo.
Man, yeah, dude, that movie's brutal.
I actually had never seen it as a kid, like all the way through, so I didn't even remember the song. But then when my son was born, my wife immediately sang Baby. It was like the first thing like she sang to him, and you know, I was already in an emotional space. But then we watched it. Like my wife had all the Disney movies on VHS, all the classic ones. Uh-huh. So that's what my kids grew up watching. We always like joke with them. Like there was a time when we were packing for a trip and one of them like grabbed their favorite VHSs and we were just like, oh, unfortunately these don't play anywhere in the world except for our house. So you can't bring them. There was a time where I feel like I watched Dumbo every day with my kid. And there was never, you know, cause like when she sings that song, I think, like she's in the cage, right? And he's being kicked on, and like, so it's just like their trunks and
it's crushing. I'm about
to cry right now.
I know it is. Oh man, it is. I can't even imagine watching.
Like thinking about your kid being picked on, like you know, when you're like 1 or 2 years old, you can just like spin out into like,
dude, like,
you're the best. But like we've all picked on people. Like we've all like we're about to go into a world of like cruelty.
Unimaginable cruelty that's gonna somehow even seemingly get more cruel as you get older. Good times. Well, on the other side of that, was a song that puts you in a better mood.
I picked a song called United by Music Makers, which was like a Gamblin' Huff, I think it's a Gamblin' Huff thing from Philly Soul days, and I first heard it in the late 90s, early 2000s on a soul jazz comp of Philly Soul. It's just instrumental. It's got like a harp on it and some organ. And I was just like, I remember joking with Noah Panda Bear from Animal Collective, but like when that comp came out and I got it and I was just listening to that song all the time. And I was like, if I was a millionaire, I would have a room in my house that just had this song on loop all the time. And I'd keep the door closed and have it soundproof so you weren't hearing it all the time. But like, it would just always be playing so that like when I needed to be in a better mood, I could just like throw some beanbag chairs in there and like open the door and go. And then my wife and I, when we were getting married, we didn't have like a string quartet or anything in our, we just had like a friend DJ and, he was like, do you want anything for like after the kiss? And you're like walking out. And we were like, oh yeah, we got to do United by the Music Makers. I mean, just even the title, like United. Right. And, but I don't think it was a famous, again, I heard it on this comp and the story I've heard about, it's just like, it was one of those things that they recorded an instrumental someday. Maybe they were going to have a singer, like all, they would just get these session players in and record these tracks. And like, it wasn't even like a full-time band. It was like, sometimes it was just like whoever the session musicians were that day, they're like, we'll publish this under this artist name or something. And if it catches, it catches. And if it doesn't, whatever, you know? So I think that's the story behind this song. And
that's awesome. That's wild. I mean, yeah, it is so, God, it's such a good, like, I mean, it is a song that never fails to make me feel good because it's just, it's like sunshine and dreams. I don't know. Like, a Music Makers United room, that is, that's a good way to like, you, if you make millions, it's like, okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, everybody's favorite question. What is objectively the best song of all time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know how you answer this, but and I don't know if people know the little notes you give when you send the questions, but it was like if an alien had to, you're going to play something for an alien. I ended up putting, I mean, you can really take your pick from it. I put from Daft Punk's Alive 2007 record, which was like the document of the pyramid set that they first did at Coachella. And I just put One More Time because, and One More Time. And then they go into Aerodynamic.
But
to me, One More Time, it was like, I remember when that song came out, we were sharing a practice space with Black Dice. I was still in college. And I remember like, even like we were all there one day to maybe like clean up a little bit, like both us and Black Dice. And I was like, oh, the new Daft Punk song is like pretty. And everybody was like, dude, fucking rules. And, it was like right when that song came out. And then my roommate came back from like, you know, we had a different lives. My roommate and me, he came back from like spring break in Cancun and, and I was playing it. And he was just like, he was like, I don't like, I heard this song multiple times a day in every club I was in down there. And I was like, that says a lot. Like it's being played in these clubs in Cancun and then like Animal Collective and Black Dice are like playing it in the practice space. Like it says a lot about like the power of Daft Punk, but that I was at that Coachella performance.
Oh shit.
And that was, and I even like, I remember calling my wife, like I could barely get through to her voicemail afterwards and just being like, I think I might've just seen the best thing I've ever seen in my life. Like it was, I don't know how to like, and that's why I would show it to an alien. I'd just be like, this is what music can do. There are 50,000 people trying to cram into this tent, but like, it's not violent. Nobody's getting hurt. Like it sounds amazing. Like the sound was pristine. These guys are wearing like these robot masks. So like there's like a healthy dose of like non-ego involved in the show. Like you're not really worshiping like rock stars, you're literally just worshiping like the music and like the spectacle that's being put, like the art that's being put on. And, it was just like, I get emotional, like thinking about it, just like we got split up. We had a shuttle back to our hotel. And I remember being like, I got split up from the rest of the band because we had played earlier that afternoon. And I remember like looking at my phone or my watch or whatever. And I was just like, they're not done and I might miss that shuttle. And I was just like, if I have to sleep in like the trailer that was our dressing room and just get like, you know, it's like, it's California and it's April. Like, I don't think I'm going to die. Like, I'm just going to sleep. And like, wherever, like, I can't miss this, you know?
No.
And then when I got back to the trailer, like I sprinted when they were done and like the other guys had like gotten there first. But I thought they were like sitting around waiting for me. And I was like, did you guys like not see that? And they're like, no, we saw it. Wow.
Yeah.
I think they bailed like with one song to go, but they were in the same mind space of like, do we really need to make this trailer, like this shuttle
right
now back to the hotel? So that I put that song just to give me a chance to tell the aliens about like what that, even though that recording is not from the Coachella performance, it was
right.
It was something, yeah.
Man, yeah, I remember hearing about it like after it happened. I mean, the whole thing. That's amazing. That's awesome. You were in the room. Like that is, yeah. And this recording, I don't know. There's something too about like the mashup of these two. Like not Matt, but
yeah.
There's the part like at the end where it's like they got the voice going and like the guitar is shredding and then it all comes back together. Oh God!
I mean, it was really big influence on us when we made the Meriwether Post Pavilion record and how we did it. Because I mean, that night we were like, it's weird, like. That's the other great thing they got away with. They never played like one of their songs just like straight. They were basically like remixing themselves the entire time, and everybody was just like up for it, you know, in the crowd because it was so good. And so when we thought about how we were going to make Meriwether, we're like, well, we want to do a sample based record, but not samples of other people's music if we can help it. So we made all the samples ourselves, and then. Tried to make it so that like when we performed it, we could basically do what they did in that set, like
it's awesome.
Remixing and DJing just bits of ourselves in the practice space. And we took a lot of that from that night.
Man. Well, that's amazing. What's a song you used to love, but you've heard it recently? If you think about it now, it doesn't really do it for you, at least in the same way.
I'm like embarrassed to say it ever did anything for me. there's a song called Hey Girl by Van Morrison's band Them. And I remember hearing in a bar one night on like Avenue B, and it was like kind of early in the night. Like I think Animal Collective had a show, but we went to go get drinks because we had gotten into Manhattan so early, and we went to go get drinks at this bar, and somebody put it on, and it was like there weren't that many people in the bar, and it was just a lot of like sad people just drinking beers, and it's like it is like kind of a beautiful song. And so I've never liked Van Morrison. Like even when I was a kid, like I couldn't stand Brown Eyed Girl. I've never liked The Moon. Like, and then somebody was like, that was around the time somebody was like, we should check out Them, like, you know, like Beck sampled their version, I think, of It's All Over Now Baby Blue, and I think so,
yeah.
Or another one of the songs. And then the Astral Weeks record, everybody was like, right. You gotta like go check out Astral Weeks. And so I did have a moment with Van Morrison around that time where I liked a bunch of Them singles and I liked Astral Weeks. And that song, Hey Girl, it was weird. It was like I would put it on mixtapes for girls, and people would be like, why does he say the thing about like you might be too young and maybe I'm attracted to your baby sister? And I was like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I guess maybe it was the times, like all those rock stars, like young girls, and I would dismiss it. And weirdly, like my wife didn't give a shit either. Like she, you know, like I put it on a mixtape for her like early on, and she was like, what a beautiful song. And she put it on not that long ago. She like made a playlist of all these songs I used to put on mixtapes for her. And it came on, and I was just like, ugh.
Yeah,
it's this is so disgusting. Like, but even just, I can't even listen to Astral Weeks. Like, I've gone back to, like, there's something about his voice and his vibe that I cannot stand. And even, like, the parts of his discography that, and it has nothing to do with his politics. I know they're kind of shitty, too, but, like, it is just, like, I'm back to, like, every song to me sounds like Moondance and Brown Eyed Girl, and the thing that I always didn't understand why everybody liked these to begin with, you know?
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, I hadn't listened to this in a while, and I was looking at the lyrics, and I was like, oh yeah, quit talking about how young she is, dude. That's, yeah. I mean,
pretty gross. I mean, in the last line of the song, it's like, now you're not even young enough for me, and there's your sister.
Yeah.
No, it's like, so disgusting.
Wow. Front page news. Okay, what's a song that most people absolutely hate? I don't know who these people are, some group of people, whatever, but you love it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I assume a lot of people love this song, but it's I don't speak German, but like I think it's Die Matrosen, and it's by, I think they were Swiss or Austrian, like a punk group called Kleenex, but they changed their name. So I don't know what their name was when they put this song out. It might have been Lilliput. But it's such a great song. It's just like after the chorus is basically like just whistling.
Right.
And to me, like, I think a lot of people do love it, but the people that don't like it were the kids in my neighborhood carpool. And they really hated when they would get in the car and, after school, I did like afternoon pickup for like another family, there were like six kids in this car. And I remember like putting it on for them one day is like they hated if I had like the Grateful Dead on the Sirius channel or something. And then I'd be like, oh, what do you guys want to hear? And then I would often not, I let my kids listen to whatever they want to. I like that kids like music, but this was like, they were like in second grade and I was
right
not feeling like it was tough to listen to some of that stuff. And, but I would, but then I remember putting that, I was like, you guys will have to love this one. Look, okay, listen how catchy it is. And they still didn't like it, but it would get stuck in their heads and then they would find it annoying, you know?
that whistling part, I'll just randomly, it'll just pop up in my head for no reason. It's so catchy.
I would suggest it too. You know, I know some people in the hockey world, there's some teams that like journalists, I don't know any players. I know some ex-players, but some teams are now letting players pick their own goal song. Like after they score, the arena always plays like a song when like the strobe lights are going and the air horn's going. And some teams have, and I'm like, this would be the best one to me.
This would be sick.
Like, just if you play like the whistling part into then the like saxophone breakdown that goes like back, like before the verses come in, like the whole crowd, you don't even have to whistle. You can still sing that whistling part.
Right.
It'd be really fun. And then like it goes in that sort of like sinister saxophone thing, which is like, all right, get ready. We're about to like drop the puck again. And so I've tried to suggest to people like, hey, if any hockey player is looking,
you
know, and there's been like podcasts and articles, like what would be the best goal song? And I suggest this to people that write those articles all the time. And I get zero love for it.
Man,
my idea.
That's awesome. That's a really good idea. I played hockey growing up. I used to watch hockey like religiously since my kid was born. It's kind of not as much.
Yeah. And
is that like a recent ish development, like in the last 10 years or something? The goal song? That's a really cool idea.
Like in the last like 2 years.
Okay. I love that. Oh, that makes, man, because I have it's called the remix version of this podcast. So if I have people on a second time, it's a whole different set of questions. Uh-huh. And one of them is like, what would your entrance music be if you were a wrestler? But this is like, oh, okay. I'm like thinking for a third edition, all right, we need the hockey goal song. That's awesome. Oh, makes me want to see, this makes me want to go watch hockey now just to see what people's goal songs are.
Not every team does it, but the Caps do it here.
Okay.
And sometimes guys try and do it ironically, like they'll play like Take Me Home Country Road by John Denver, which everyone sings along to, but
yeah,
I know like hate for that song or anything, but I just don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's I watch a lot of like English soccer and my favorite team is Arsenal and they play Sweet Caroline a lot, which I don't get. Like again, everybody sings along, but I don't get it. I don't.
Man, yeah. That's usually like every sport, like the Red Sox do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, on to other things. What is the most romantic song?
I had trouble between two here.
Okay.
What did I pick? Did I pick TV On in Bed?
Yes.
Okay. This was a song by Tronix, which was early 80s, like kind of very simple Velvet Underground influence, like post-punk thing. I remember when the early 2000s, like, I don't know if there had been an official remix, but somebody in New York that worked at that record store, Rocks in Your Head, a friend of ours who was really into British music from this time, like, he was super into like Comic Gain and all these bands. He had a CDR of the Tronix record that we all passed around. And, and it was like before, I think you could rip things onto your computer, but,
right.
But like, if you could, you know, like we would tape it off of this CD he had, and then like people just, somebody maybe even like made a bunch, like I had a boot, like a CDR of it and a Xeroxed cover, like with a Xerox insert of the actual record cover. Anyway, this is a beautiful song, like in terms of how simple it is of like, I mean, I think we've all like the expression of like love or romance, just like you're at a party or out somewhere and like, it's not even like you want to go home to like do it. You just want to like go home. And, like, let's, you know, I mean, that's part of it, but it's like, but like to say you just want to go home and like watch a movie together and like for that to mean that and not just be like a suggestive thing, you know?
There's like a really, I don't know. I love this song and I love this whole record's awesome, but there's like this sort of like mundane intimacy to it that I think is.
Yeah.
And the way, and I also love like the vocal delivery kind of, I feel like it matches that perfectly. Mm-hmm. And it's such a good song. And
I mean, the whole album is really romantic. Like there's so many great simple three chord love songs on it.
Somebody said for a three chord love song, man.
I almost chose though. I was going to go back to my wedding. I was going to choose Sleepwalk by Santo and Johnny. That was my, my alternate. My wife and I fought for a long time about like, what should be the first dance song. And that was what we
agreed on. That's a good one.
Yeah. And we narrowly avoided like, do you watch that Natasha Lyonne show Poker Face? You seen it?
I've seen like the first season or first season and a half.
Okay. There's a whole episode about how terrible that song is. And she was at the time of my wedding, she was dating a friend of mine. So she was like on our guest list. They broke up before the wedding, but she was on our guest list, as like my friend's plus one, but like they were dating enough that like her name, like we were going to give her name to whoever made the place cards. You know what I mean?
Wow.
But, they broke up. So she didn't end up coming. And her ex-boyfriend was literally the person who came up to us after we danced. I was like, that was the best choice of a wedding song ever. And then like 15 years later, we were watching the show and we were like, good thing Natasha didn't show up. That would have made.
Yeah, man.
I haven't seen her since then, but I do have to like, we have to have it out over this.
Right. Yeah.
It's maybe a cliched song, but it was. We've always liked it. Helps kids go to sleep too.
Hey, double trouble. Now I'm gonna have to look up that episode. I can't. I feel like we didn't watch the second season. I don't know who can keep up, but I want to see it just because of that. So, all right, what is a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
It was for the better. It was "Little Girl on Bloom" by Thin Lizzy. I was in my 20s, I think. We were on tour. We used to have a good friend who's still in the music. He's a booking agent, but he was a jack of all trades, like booking agent, backline rental, merch guy, roadie. His name was Fitz, and he's Irish. He would drive a lot, especially when we toured in Europe. And one time he put on like the Thin Lizzy record that this one's on, or it might have been like a comp. So he played this and he played Randolph's Tango, a few other ones. And when this song came on, I hadn't heard it before. Cause to me, Thin Lizzy was always like, I knew them from classic rock radio and like, I didn't dislike them, but they just didn't like Boys Are Back in Town and Jailbreak. They just seemed to like fit in alongside like You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet. And like all those other kind of songs that you would hear on classic rock radio when I was a kid. That like you know, but you're like, they didn't inspire me to go like digging for like deep cuts by those bands. And then when he played this song and I was like, who is this? Like this song is amazing. And he was like, Thin Lizzy, like, you don't know Thin Lizzy. And I was like Boys Are Back in Town, Thin Lizzy. And then after this, it made, you know, and then going into like Phil Lynott solo stuff. It really changed my, like, for a year after that, I was telling everybody, I was like, you know who's a genius? I was Phil Lynott. But this was the song that made me realize there was more to them than, and those songs are great. You know, it's, I don't even know like, the songs. It's like outside of their discography or anything. It was never like I disliked those songs, but it just didn't, I don't think they really give a sense of like how much there is to find within Lizzy.
I think that's, this song, it's such a like, it's like heavy and delicate and I don't know. It's such an incredible song. And it's
got like the guitar solo outro, you know, like,
And it still like, Because it's like I similarly, it's of course I knew Jailbreak, knew the boys were back in town, and I remember hearing other stuff and thinking like, oh, but you can still hear it's like, oh, it's the same band, like it sounds like the same band. And then I feel like it also puts those songs in kind of a different perspective. It's like, oh, like you said, like when you hear them alongside all these other kind of less interesting classic rock, whatever. Which they fit into in a way, but when you hear them, like within the context of other Thin Lizzy or like Phil Lynott, it's like, oh no, this is actually a lot smarter than all this stuff.
We also have, they were, it's aspirational for me that they, as a band, I don't know if this is true, but, or if it's apocryphal, but, I heard that they were a, like, no hits in the encore band. Like, you play all of your hits during the main set and you earn the encore. And only the people that like genuinely want to hear like deep cuts or more from you should stick around.
Oh, I love that.
But like, don't, I guess in the '70s, like it was a newer thing for rock bands to get encores. And so they were, you know, they spoke out against the engineering of one, you know?
I like that a lot. That,
we don't do it in Animal Collective. We totally are like, too scared to make the encore a deep cut. We're like, everybody wants a hit in the encore, so we'll save it. But we don't feel good about that. Well, we want to be Thin Lizzy.
Yeah. It's good to have goals. It's good to have dreams. All right, what about lyric? Like, are lyrics a big deal to you? Like, can lyrics make or break a song?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, obviously, like, they break it for Hey Girl by them.
But, yeah, there are situations you can't ignore.
I'm not like there are times where I couldn't even tell you like a song I love, like sometimes what's being said. Not like, they don't rule for me. There are other, like, when it's like attention in Animal Collective, sometimes like there are certain people that are like, the lyrics are the most important thing. Anybody can make like a pretty song. Like, the lyrics are the only thing that sets it apart. I just don't agree. But when, like, then there are, they can definitely like make a song for me, like when they are exceptional. And it's hard for me to know like what comes first, you know, like a lot of Silver Jews songs, like he's one of my favorites, David Berman, and his lyrics, like intentionally. So I think like are the focal point, and it's hard for me to separate, like, what would I think of this music?
Like kind of outside of the
I think it's the song like Black and Brown Shoes. This isn't what I chose, by the way, but the song Black and Brown Shoes. So I'm not even good with titles sometimes for my favorite things, but it's on Natural Bridge, and it's like, I don't know what I would think of that, the music of that song, without the lyrics, you know?
Right.
Like, then he'll say something like, I mean, I think about it all the time. Like, he has like one line that's like, I'm afraid I have more in common with who I was than who I'm becoming. Like, I think about it like every day of my life, but I don't know what I would think of the.
Like, put some sort of more generic lyric over that. And is it?
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point. Okay. Well, all that being said though, what did you pick for your
favorite? I think we're looking at a song that I've gotten into just for the last 5 years. It's Lady with the Braid by Dori Previn. Song I've like, I heard it on NTS one day when I was driving my kids back from the pool. So I couldn't pull over and like look at the app to see what, and I'd never heard it before. It's not on streaming. I mean, you can find it on YouTube, but since I was driving, I was literally just trying to like hold on to like lyrics that I could Google when I got home. And because the lyrics were just like flooring me. They're so like stream of consciousness, and they're so vulnerable in this way of like, you get, it's just, for those who haven't heard it, first off, you should, but
it's
like, it's a woman who's brought somebody home. You don't really know if it's the first time that she's brought him home. And maybe she feels more strongly about him than he does for her. But maybe she's also just like insanely lonely and just needs like somebody to come home with her. And there are a million ways you could write that song about being like, I'm lonely. I'm sad. Right. I wish I had companionship. And the way she like does this, where she's like, it's basically her narrating what she would say to this person when he walks into her house. And it's like, so like, just like details of like where you can hang your coat.
You know, there's like such a specificity to it.
Yeah. But then like all of a sudden, then she slips up as she gets more comfortable as like a host to this guy or person, you know, she slips up and says, and like, lets like something slip about like, just how like you can't leave, you have to stay, you know, like it's the most important thing in my life that like you spend the night with me. And like, she gets like too intimate and then she tries to backtrack, and it's written in this way of like, in this, she's just speaking to this guy, but it could just be her inner monologue that you're hearing. And it's so masterful. I really like when things are not done in an expected way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, like there are a million songs about like, I'm lonely, I'm sad, or I love this person or whatever. And like, I've never heard any song express all those things in this particular way. So like, I was mm-hmm. trying to like, it was like, yeah, I was driving my kids home from the pool and I was just like, I like almost need to pull over. I was like, I have to figure out what this song is. And then I got home and I tried to Google what I could. It was like not a quick drive. I tried to Google what I could remember. Nothing. I would get these fragments of lyrics. I would go to YouTube and listen to what it was. I was like, this isn't the song. This isn't the song. And then like an hour after that, Dave from Animal Collective, if you can't figure out this point, I text with my bandmates all day. He texted me and was like, I heard this song on NTS earlier. Like, check how good it is. And it was that song. And I was like,
wow.
And he had done the same thing. Like, he had been listening and like, then he found it. And he sent it to me because he thought I would like it. And I was like, you have no, I've been spending like the last hour trying to figure out what this song is. And,
wow. That's, it is so, like you said, I've heard this, songs about this subject matter a million times. And a million of them exist, but there's only one like this. That I know. Yeah, maybe there's another one, but whatever. Like, and it does have that kind of like inner dial. It's like almost somebody working through their demons in real time like when the mask slips a little bit and it's, oh God.
Yeah. And she was like self-conscious about like things in her house that like are maybe a little old and tattered and.
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. Really good.
Yeah. If people haven't heard it, you need to hear it. So go listen to the playlist that's in the show notes. So yeah. So what song have you or can you listen to the most?
The song I have heard the most, I think it's called X by System of a Down, but this is also a stand-in for like a playlist of songs that Animal Collective front of house guys use to tune the PA as we're setting up on stage.
I love it. That makes sense. Wow. That's hilarious.
So one of our sound guys, he loves like Rick Rubin Productions.
Okay.
He wants to tune PAs anyway. He feels like the frequency ranges are always of a Rick Rubin produced record are always like really dialed in to like produce. If you tune the PA so that like that sounds like the record, then like the live show, it will sound good in the room. And he likes System of a Down. So like,
there you go.
Toxicity and this is always the first one he plays before Toxicity. And he also plays a bunch of songs from the Jayhawks, one of the Jayhawks records, which would be like, you know, so, but I've just heard them so much. And then we had another sound guy. He played he played like a King Tubby remix of Ethiopian Kings. Who's that by? Hold on one second. I can figure out who the original Rod Taylor. So Ethiopian Kings by Rod Taylor, and he played a King Dubby remix of it. That was always his song to tune the PA. So this is like a group of songs that I feel like I've heard the most. I mean, because it goes back to like the mid 2000s, and Animal Collective's played hundreds and hundreds of shows.
I was just find it interesting to hear like what songs people tune, like the PAs too, because I had, I can't remember what the song was now, but I had Eric Mingus on the show very, very early. It was like the third episode. And he talked about whenever he's setting up his studio or he's in the studio, he has, I can't remember what song it was, but it was like the same. It was this question. And it was, yeah, I use this song to make sure it sounds how I want it. I was like, oh. So anyway, I should start a list of those. Although I think this is maybe the third time anyone said it, so it'll have three songs on it, but whatever. All right, well, what's the best hype song?
I would go with, this also goes back to Tour, but Brian Auger's Oblivion Express, and the song is Happiness is Just Around the Bend.
Yeah.
I don't know if other people would consider it a hype song, but like we... Dave from Animal Collective, I think it was Dave's. He was the first one to bring like an iPad and have a Bluetooth speaker. So he would often DJ in the dressing room, like leading up to like in between like the support band finishing and us waiting to be told it was time for us to play. He would DJ like often just like from his iTunes library. This was always whenever like we got the radio, the call over like the walkie talkie, like guys, like turn 5 minutes, on. You know, like we need you in 5 minutes to start playing. He would immediately like every tour had a different one. He would always be like, I've picked a song for like that thing. And yeah, different tours had different ones, but this was my favorite of 5 minutes guys. And then like we would play this. And we would turn up really loud in the dressing room, and like the guys who needed to warm up their voices would sing along. And but like we would just sort of pace around the room and stretch a little bit, you know. It was the four of us always really enjoyed listening to this song together, and it always put us in a great mood to play.
Yeah, it's such a good, oh man, it's got like the groove on it is so good, and the organ just kind of rips. It's just like. Yeah, it's another one of those songs that makes me want to get up and just move my body.
Uh-huh.
All right, last two questions. What is the song that means the most to you? Not necessarily because of the song itself, but you associate it with something or someone or et cetera.
Yeah,
et cetera.
I mean, I feel like these next two questions, like, I don't know if I think about music in this way, but but I guess just to... As someone who's been like really lucky and fortunate enough to make my living as a musician, you know, for the time being anyway, but it's been 20 years, like that's 20 more years than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah.
I'm just like so fortunate, so grateful for it. And like the song that I guess means the most, like it all started with the song Greenlander by Pavement, I guess, because that was like the first song that Dave and I ever played together, maybe in the basement. We figured out a few other ones, but the first thing we ever were like, oh, there's this like open mic thing and we want to like actually like play in front of people, like with two of our other friends. We were like, let's like cover a couple Pavement songs. So we did Greenlander, which was like an outtake of theirs at the time. It was just on a comp, but we were nerds, so we had it and we liked it. And we played the song Frontwards, which was on their Woodbury Domestic EP. So that was like the two songs we did at this open mic. And first time ever playing live music in front of people that wasn't like a piano recital. First time like we worked on learning a song together that like we played. And that was when we were 15. And it's been 30, almost 32 years since then. And still playing together. Met Josh and Noah like within a couple years of that and started playing with them. And but like that was the first one. So this still means a lot to me just for that reason. You know, it's ground zero.
Yeah, that's a big deal. And hey, Greenlander, very pertinent in current events. All right. Well, what is, at least in this moment of time, I don't know how you qualify, but whatever. What is your favorite song?
I mean, I'm going to pick Interstellar Overdrive by Pink Floyd. I'd probably specifically pick like not the Piper at the Gates of Dawn version, but I'd pick the version that was on the soundtrack to Tonight, Let's All Make Love in London. Again, yeah. I just said I'm a nerd, but I think it is better than the album version. It goes more places. And you know, it was just like, it was around the time being a band like in high school and like teenagers in high school playing, like even when we started doing our own original material, it still was very like indebted to Pavement and indie rock, and starting to take psychedelic drugs and listen to things like and getting into horror movie soundtracks, and we knew this song, like we knew Floyd from like even being younger, like, you know, liking Grateful Dead, liking Pink Floyd, liking sort of the druggier side of classic rock stuff, you know, even before getting into Pavement. But we started playing shows as our high school band Automine, where we would play like our material, but we were like getting more into horror movie soundtracks and like abstract music and tape music. And so we would start like doing sections like that. And somebody reminded us, they were like, oh, you guys like remind me a lot of Syd Barrett, era Floyd. And we're like, oh yeah, we used to like that stuff. And then I guess we just kind of put it on pause with when we got into Pavement. Right. But then we dug it out again. And like, I feel like that's where things like clicked for us a little bit, like, oh, right. Like we can like combine all these things that we like and stumble onto our own thing. But Interstellar Overdrive to me, it was like, I'm putting out an instrumental record next. Like the fact that a piece of music can be this powerful to me, like while being instrumental, mm-hmm. while not having a ton of like emotional chord changes in it, but just like be a journey and like the structure of it, like it sort of ends where it begins. Like, I mean, it's a corny thing to say, but like when I was a teenager, what it is just like a short little musical trip, you know?
Right.
But it just like, I learned a lot from this song and even like the idea that like Syd Barrett got a lot of his ideas from seeing a performance by AMM
Yeah.
It's like a piece of creativity, like an inspired creativity from someone who like, really, it's like weird. Like at the time was not much older than I was when I was listening to this, like he was 20 or 21 years old. How much like exploration is just like packed in there. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's still the most fun part of music is like, not quite sure where it's going. Mm-hmm. When I work with modular synthesis stuff, like I'm not really like aiming for like, I just like see what comes out of it, you know?
Yep.
It's weird to say it's my favorite, like, kind of listen to the song like a lot and it may be like, there's songs that maybe make me more emotional or
sure.
It's a hard question to answer, but like
when absolutely. I just,
let me think of a song that like really just like taught me a lot and that I still like as I'm pushing 50, you know, or like, yeah, I'm in my mid to late 40s. Like it still feels like an endless source of inspiration to me. Mm-hmm. So that's why I picked it.
Yeah, no, that all resonates. Like when you were saying about like modular synth stuff, no, I don't want to like go down this road real far, but I held off on doing any of that for a long time because I knew how much it just takes all your money.
Yeah. My system has not changed in a long time because of that too.
But once I got a couple, like it's been about 2 years now. Like I needed it. I had a project I was working on and I got a little bit of funding for it. And I knew to do what I wanted to do. Like that was the way to do it. But that's still like, I just love I love just sitting there and basically playing around and seeing where it goes. And with music in general, that's like where it all starts. And going back to bring this all the way back around, like, turn, you know, plug it in a hurdy, just trying to have fun and start there and see like, yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, there's some magic to it still. Yeah. I've been doing this for 30 plus years too. And there are still things that I still get that thrill from. And, as long as that happens.
Yeah. Keep going.
Well, this was a ton of fun. Thank you again for taking the time and, giving it a go.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So the record is out on the 31st.
Mm-hmm.
On
30th, whatever Friday is.
30th. Yeah. Yeah, 30th. Yeah. And any shows or anything coming up? Anything you want to mention? This is actually going to be out like next week, so it's like
I'm going to head to the. I played the set on the East Coast quite a bit, even though no one really knew what they were hearing. But I want to played on the West Coast. I've never really played solo on the West Coast. So we'll meet up with Bitch and Bajas on their tour. We're going to start in Portland on February 21st and play Pacific Northwest and then down through California. And then over to Tucson, which was a big influence on this record. I used to live in Tucson. So my time there influences this record a lot. And, February 21st to March 4th. From like Pacific Northwest down to Tucson. So, also playing some shows with Danny Perez, Stress Disorder, Dean Spunt from No Age, Cool Man of Time. So, a bunch of cool people on the bill.
Awesome. I will put a link to all like show dates in the show notes. And also shout out to Tucson and Mark Masters who helped make this happen. Once again, thank you to Brian Waits. Please go pick up a copy, listen to Can I Get a Pack of Camel Lights, out on Friday, January 30th on Drag City. It's my first favorite record of 2026. Let's put it that way. All right, that's it. Listen to Brian's picks at the link in the show notes, the playlist, because there's some good ones. Oh man, you know, we talked about the Dory Previn song, and if you haven't heard that, please go listen. Otherwise, thanks for listening. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating, a review, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, all those things. It helps with algorithms and all that shit. If you really, really like the show and want to make sure it continues, patreon.com/FoxyDigitalis, $3 a month is, you know, that ongoing support means a lot. Thank you to everybody who does that. And that's it. All right. Keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.